So before turning to something a bit more scientific in your life, could we just mention a few of your other interests? You're very interested in music, and I understand mountaineering, not something you can do very easily around Ottawa.
No. Well, I shouldn't best call it mountaineering. Mountain hiking is a better expression for it. I mean, I have done in the 60s, it was in the 60s, I have climbed three mountains in the immediate neighborhood of this place that we go to during the summer vacation that we'll be going to this coming July, which are more than 4,000 meters high. So they're not trivial mountains, but there was some climbing, some mountaineering in that we put on crampons and this kind of stuff. I don't do that anymore, but I'm still doing mountain hiking.
Well, tell us a little bit more about your interest in music.
Well, I've always been interested in music. In fact, my brother was a musician, and one of my friends at school time, at high school, was quite a good piano player, and they often played with four hands Beethoven symphonies, through all the symphonies. So I have, and I kept my interest in music, but I also learned to play the violin when I was a youngster, but I had to give that up when I started university work. And it was only in 1945, after I finished my volume 2, that I decided I need now something that I can really do with pleasure, and that it should not be a chore, as if writing a book is. And I decided to take lessons in singing. And the more I did so, the more I enjoyed it, and the more I enjoyed Schubert songs and Brahms. And Brahms I started fairly late in the game, and I enjoyed Mozart and Verdi. So I've done a fair amount without addressing the public that way. But I've only given one, or taken part in one concert where people had to pay. That was here at the Jewish Community Center, where they performed a well-known oratorio by Handel. As one gets older, memory becomes a problem. Can't remember it right now.
Was this here in Ottawa?
Here in Ottawa. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now that you've appeared in as a public performer, did you enjoy the experience?
Yes, I did. I performed also at a physics meeting in Vancouver, where they wanted to give a concert of physicists, and I took part in that together with my friend, the late Harry Welsh, who was a pianist, and I did some singing, and I enjoyed that. And then I had the people from the Fifth Estate, and they interviewed me, insisted that there should also be some singing, and I obliged them.
Splendid.
So that was public, if you like.
I won't keep you long enough for that tonight. So,
I just had a session this afternoon. working in a company.
Oh.
Or earlier this afternoon, I should say. Remember, I skipped my lunch for that.
I see. Oh, I really shouldn't keep you long then. Oh, I should have brought my tape recorder around. So you've never ceased your research after you...
No.
After you officially retired.
I never retired.
You never retired. Oh, you never officially retired.
Not yet.
Not yet.
I'm still on the full payroll of NRC.
But you have a special title now.
Yes, I have a special title.
Which in fact goes from the time when you were supposed to retire.
It goes back to the time when I was supposed, when I would have retired if I had followed the rule. But this is one thing you might say that I got out of getting the prize, that they never wanted me to retire. So far.
Do you allow yourself a little bit more leisure time now?
Slightly, perhaps. Slightly. I mean, I don't work quite as hard for reasons of health.
But you come to the lab every day?
I come to the lab every day, yes.
Something I've always wanted to ask people born on Christmas Day, do you always end up just getting one set of presents? Do you just have one celebration?
I was very upset when I was a small boy about this particular problem. It doesn't bother me now.
But it still happens.
People are now more aware of it, I think. But as a boy, it happened all too many times, and I was really upset.
Turn into something a bit more serious. You, as a scientist, you've had a very unusual role. You've taken on sometimes the role of debating with senators and government ministers who are more inclined to science policy than science. This borderline between politics and science has made your name very well known to people who are not perhaps interested in science as such. And you've also been on the borders of political statements when you've been interested in the support of Soviet dissidents and Soviet scientists.
Yes.
This has probably taken up a lot of time.
It does take more time than you might think, because I'm not sufficiently articulate to express it except when it's really necessary and when it doesn't come easy to me.
Have these developments in recent years surprised yourself? Have these developments surprised you?
No, not really. I was always aware that our politicians and the general public have really no understanding of basic research or its importance by itself. The best that you can get out of them is support basic research, because eventually it always turns out to be useful. But to support science, well, they do support astronomy. Well, even that is not so sure that the present government and the Nielsen Task Force, just as they don't want to support the Art Center Orchestra and all this kind of thing, at least that is talk about that. To me, sounds like a terrible thought to demolish something that has been first rate, just because of some preconceived idea about what should be done by people who don't know. By people who don't know. But at any rate, I was aware that when I talked to non-scientists, the impression they have of science is only if it's useful, it's any good. That's the wrong attitude to science.
I guess the audiences that we might have in the United States will not be familiar with some of the developments that he's been concerned with in the period from about 1968 onwards. I guess there isn't time really to talk much about this, merely to say that from about 1968 onwards there have been problems in funding for pure research in Canada, and you have been a very prominent speaker on behalf of science.
Yeah, but not a very efficient one, not a very successful one, should I say. I see it in the attitude. I mean, the previous government didn't understand basic science, and the present government doesn't understand basic science. So what have I done? I mean, Yeah, I made my stand, but they never come and ask me, what do you think about this?
Oh, I'm sure they get to hear about it from the press, though.
From the press, I have been interviewed by the press any number of times.
Well, do you personally believe that freedom of science will survive?
I'm not sure of that. I hope so, but I'm not sure of that, no. Because bureaucracy is increasing all the time. And eventually I fear that it will completely negate the freedom of science. And then of course there are people that say that scientists are responsible for this and that. Well, that may be true in some instances, but most of the time what scientists develop is something that may or may not be applicable, but nobody knows the answer. As I said before, when microwaves were studied and the maser was invented by Charlie Towns, he didn't know that it would be something useful. He invented it because he wanted to study a basic problem in the reaction, in the interaction between light and matter. And the same with a laser. And people, as long as people don't realize that, they won't get the real food from science.
And this is, I guess, an international situation.
It is an international situation, yes.
Concern.
But it's more or less so in different countries. I mean, in Germany, the Minister of Science in Germany, for example, emphasized at every turn that they want to support basic science, and they have a far higher percentage of basic science supported by the German government than we have. Far higher. Mm. And the same in Japan, in spite of evidence to the contrary.
Interesting. Turning back to more scientific matters, the two questions I wanted to ask you, I guess we have covered them to some degree during our conversation, which was largely about the progress of instruments. Mm-hmm. I think we can, unless there's something else you'd like to say. The other thing I was going to say is we don't have to review your work because this is all in the literature, but I guess the best known discoveries associated with your work have been the CH3 and the CH2 radicals,
yes,
and perhaps the ammonium radical. I wondered which of your own work, which of your own discoveries have given you personally the most satisfaction.
It's like asking me which of your children you like best.
Oh, I see.
I have only two children, so.
So you, in effect, were excited by all of them.
Yeah, I mean, at the time I was excited by them. I must say, in my later years, the discovery of triatomic hydrogen has given me about the most of the pleasure, because it was something rather unexpected. And something that could have been done 30 years earlier, and nobody did. And could have been done when some people were very much involved, more than I was ever, in the study of the spectrum of hydrogen. And here they didn't find it. Mm-hmm. We did.
Mm-hmm. And that was in...
And that's when I was 75 years old. So I feel rather proud of that. No, but I mean, I certainly don't want to belittle the discovery of CH2. I feel proud of that too, but it's a long time ago now.
And finally, I think I have to come back to the question of interaction between your subject and chemistry. I mentioned this earlier on. Chemists in the 30s were having a terrible problem with free radicals. Did you ever meet F.O. Rice?
F.O. Rice?
Rice.
Rice. Oh. Yes, I think it did, actually.
Well, of course, the link is with Dr. Stacy here at the NRC.
Yes.
He was very interested.
Yes, yes.
I mean, his subject was free radicals. But I just wondered, the chemists were having a difficult time throughout the 30s and just trying to convince, well, people like Rice, convince other chemists that free radicals existed. But people like yourselves, physicists, had no problems at all. You were just carrying on with your work. Did you interact during this period along these lines? Did you ever have a chemist come up to you and cry on your shoulder and say that they were having these terrible problems and could you help?
Not really, no. No, I don't think I could say that. I mean, for me, I mean, many diatomic molecules that I was dealing with or other people in spectroscopy were dealing with are free radicals. You take OH, you take CH, you take NH. They are free radicals, and it was a perfectly everyday experience to see a spectrum and under some conditions where OH and CH and NH occur, even in a flame. A flame is a chemical phenomenon, and you see these radicals occurring there. So if the radicals are there, is no question. The only question is, can we find a spectrum so that we can look at their structure? Will we know the spectrum of OH, NH, and CH, and many other similar ones, SH? And there's no problem, but the problem was with radicals where the spectrum had not been seen, like CH2 and CH3, or NH2.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, of course, would make it very late. This was in the 50s.
Yeah, that's right.
Whereas people like Rice, who were having problems, yes, this was back in the 30s.
Yeah, that's right.
Their problem, I guess, was not merely identifying the existence of radicals, but they had to know the concentration and then determine mechanism, if you say.
And the concentration, of course, is difficult to determine if you don't know the spectrum. I mean, the indirect chemical methods are somewhat problematic, at least to a physicist, so they appear.
So, do you remember ever having a conversation with any chemist, perhaps Dr. Stacy, about...
Dr. Stacy, I had many conversations with him about...
What were the things that, as a chemist, he was most bothered about, that he couldn't resolve?
I don't know whether I can answer that. I mean, he was convinced, when I knew him, that CH3 existed.
Of course.
And he determined the time it takes for it to disappear, and I mean to react with another CH3 to form ethane and this sort of thing. So I don't really think that he was really terribly concerned about that. He had chemical methods to do that, and I think it turned out, on the whole, it turned out to be quite satisfactory.
Well, they went through these different periods, because in the 30s, that was the period when they were trying to convince not Stacy, but Rice, was trying to convince chemists of the existence of free radicals. But later on, he came up with Herzfeld, you know, the Rice-Herzfeld mechanism. But by the 40s and 50s, when you came to Ottawa,
that's right,
they had... they believed in the
existence. I mean, I began to be interested in free radicals as such after I had this idea about the cometary spectrum, the so-called 40-50 being due to CH2, which it turned out it wasn't. But at that time, I really started to look up some papers by Panet and later papers on the same subject, who were trying to find a spectrum of these things, and at least who first tried to establish that they really exist by moving a mirror from one place to another and this kind of thing. And so my interest started, I would say, in around 1940 or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I thought that the chemists, the physical chemists, the kineticists, that all their things work out, except it didn't always work, how they would detect free radicals by the reactions that were taking place.
Mm-hmm.
It was often a little somewhat hypothetical, though, so it seemed to me. But there it was. But I was interested in the spectrum. I was going to show them that here is the CH2 molecule, or here is the CH3 radical, I should say.
Well, what about Bonhoeffer? Bonhoeffer's work is extremely interesting because he appears to be extremely advanced.
Yeah.
When you look back at it. What about your conversations with him? Did he come raising specific problems?
He was the first one, I think.